some said that the 2-1 defeat to Sheffield United in the FA Cup would be the end of Reading's season, but a 3-1 victory at Birmingham on the weekend has shown that all is not lost. There is still plenty of enjoyment to be had in this season for Reading FC as Mark Bowen's team went and picked up a clinical, ruthless 3 points at St Andrews. Welcome to episode 224 of the Tarleson Podcast with your host Mark Mayo, sponsored by ZCZ Films. And this week, Ollie Allen is on the other end of the line. How's it going, mate?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm very excited, actually. I'm trying my new microphone for the first time, which, of course, thanks to our Patreon subscribers for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you to everyone who's helped us invest in some new tech. So hopefully that is coming through loud and clear. Sim and Ollie have got theirs up and running. Sadly, that's only a 66% hit rate as my tech. My tech knowledge has failed me so far. So I'm on the old-fashioned headphone mic for this week. But hopefully that is still coming through loud and clear. And speaking of which, we have an opportunity for people to come and meet us face-to-face, I suppose, in a couple weeks' time. The Star Hall of Fame event on March 23rd, I believe. It's about an 8 p.m. kickoff at the Madstad for that. So double-check Star for all the details if you want to come down to that. We'll be there, as per usual, with the table and hopefully chatting to some big names. They never tell me which players are actually going to be there before, as it's all so under wraps and everything. So hopefully there will be some big names there. They promised that. And hopefully we'll see you down there. But in the meantime, let's talk about a couple of huge games for Reading FC this week in the recap.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Right then, Ollie, I'm going to bombard you with some stats. Actually, no, let's go through the stats one by one and have a little discussion about each one of them, because this 3-1 win at Birmingham on the weekend, 1-0 down at half-time with a bit of a Matt Miazga error, letting Birmingham score very early on, and then we came back, Miazga get an equaliser, and then Yaku Mate and Pele rounding off the scoring for a very nice 3 points on the road. And this is the first stat that I want to talk about, is that we have lost 3 of 15 away games under Mark Bowen, winning 7 of them. That is a very impressive stat, isn't it?
It is mightily impressive, and I think we've actually picked up more points away from home than we have at home this season, which is perhaps more of a damning indictment of how bad our home form has been compared to how good the away form has been. But yeah, nonetheless, I mean, you know, you look at those wins over Christmas, the wins away at Preston and at Fulham as well, that they were fantastic, and this Birmingham win really was sensational. And as you say, going behind so early on and recovering from that and having quite a fantastic second half against the Birmingham side who hadn't, I don't think they'd lost in the league since New Year's Day. So it's no mean feat at all getting that win away from home. It does make you wonder just that slightly, you know, where we might be in the table if we'd sort of picked up some more points at home.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? For every sort of good aspect of the away, there is the sort of bad aspect of the home at the moment. And that's basically why we're not in the playoffs, because if we had good on both sides, then we would be, or certainly knocking on the door. And with this Birmingham win, you know, from the nature of the goals as well, I found it really satisfying, because the Miazga goal obviously is just a brilliant hit. The Mate goal from the header is just a nice ball in. Both of them nice balls in. But that third one, the clincher, is always the most satisfying for me, because with the game so wide open, you could think that players would, you know, just hoof the ball out to play or lose their heads, because it almost seems like too good a chance to be true. I think it's McCleary's free in the centre circle, he's onside, and there's so much space that it's almost like Puskas plays the ball into him and just thinks, well, something's got to go wrong here. But it goes out wide to Pele, a really nice finish, and as you know, just the nature of it for me was just really satisfying.
Yeah, it was great to see us being so clinical. You know, we've bemoaned, you know, for so much of this season, you know, how bad we've been if we're on a goal. You know, we've had so many chances in so many games, and you look at a number of games and think, you know, if we can take a couple of chances here and there, you know, we can turn, you know, defeats into draws and draws into wins and whatnot. So it was fantastic to see us being so ruthless. I mean, as you mentioned there, I mean, the nature of sort of all three goals was fantastic. I mean, that finish from Matt Miazga from a centre-back was a striker's finish, really. So it was great to see him score. Yaku Mate obviously is on excellent form. Another goal for him, and then, as you say, yeah, that goal from Pele, I mean, obviously really, really well taken from him. Not usual that we see him that high up up the pitch. And obviously, you know, he missed that chance against Sheffield United in the FA Cup last Tuesday. So it was great to see him get on the score sheet. So yeah, just taking our chances, because I don't think we had that many sort of clear-cut opportunities other than those three goals. But, you know, so to take those three chances there was fantastic. And as I say, we've been saying all season long about how if we could just be a bit more clinical where we might be. So certainly, yeah, getting those three goals from those three chances was fantastic.
Well, that leads me nicely on to my next sort of set of stats. And this is the game of two halves was the narrative that a lot of people have been saying about the Birmingham win. And in the first half, we had 62% of possession, but we had five shots to their seven. Obviously 1-0 down. In the second half, we had 35% possession and four shots to their 11. So in a way, we benefited so much from just letting Birmingham come onto us. And I suppose a lot of that as well, the possession was after our goals as they kind of pushed for the equaliser or pushed for, you know, to go back ahead. So is this a case of the result just, you know, we've just been clinical and therefore we've taken our chances? Or is this kind of a wider, a tactical sign that fits into the narrative of us being so good away, that we actually are a good counter-attacking side, we're actually not too fussed about teams coming onto us and having the ball, and you know, those are really vital aspects for when you go away from home.
I think you have to credit the defence as well, because I think I was reading Sim's further reading column yesterday, which is a really good read, so go and check that one out. I think Birmingham, I think 10 of those 11 shots in second half came after our second goal. So 10 shots from the 57th minute onwards, and Reading boxed 7 of them, which is a hugely impressive stat, and made 31 clearances after that time as well. So obviously, you know, we played Matt Miasca and Michael Morrison as centre-back pairing, you know, two players who haven't necessarily played together that much this season. It's usually been a back three or Morrison and Liam Moore. But, you know, the two of them obviously played together now. This game, they played the Barnsley game and the Sheffield United game, and they've done pretty well in all three of them. So that's certainly a setup that seems to be working quite well for Mark Byrne. So, yeah, I think you have to credit both the attack and the defence. As I say, the attack was certainly clinical. As I say, that finish from Miasca was fantastic, and it was typical of a striker, really. But at the other end of the pitch, you know, that defence put in a really, really good shift.
It's funny that we're not missing Liam Moore, isn't it?
Indeed. Well, I was going to say that, because obviously these past three games, obviously we lost the Sheffield United game, but even so, I think we were still quite good defensively in that game. And obviously a clean sheet against Barnsley, and obviously the only goal for Birmingham at the weekend coming from a mistake. But other than that, they were quite solid defensively. So, yeah, I'm not going to say too much on that. I think for me, Liam Moore is perhaps a little bit overrated in the fact, just because he's the captain, and obviously he shows a bit of passion, he beats his chest and whatnot, and perhaps that maybe gives him a bit of a higher approval rating than if he didn't do those sorts of things. He's not a bad defender, don't get me wrong. I don't mind having him in the side, but I think if you look at that evidence from the last three games and how well they have done, I'd be tempted to stick with me. Obviously, you know, Matt Miasca might not be here next season. I think I said at the weekend that I would try and go all out and try and sign him in the summer, because I think he really has a lot to decide. He has that leadership, he has that quality. Obviously, he had that defensive lapse at the weekend, but in general, I think he really adds a lot to that side, and is probably our best centre-back. So I don't know how much it would take for us to sign him permanently from Chelsea in the summer. I might say maybe around 5 million-ish. I don't think that would be a bad signing at all to get him permanently, because over the last sort of 18 months since we brought him in last January, he's been fantastic. And I would certainly like to see Miasca and Morrison going forward for the next couple of weeks at least.
Yeah, I must admit, I'm struggling to think of reasons why you would bring Moore back in. His element of being the captain is, you know, you could say that it's important, but you could also point to the last three games and say it's not like we've lacked for you know, determination and leaders and those sort of things, that even when Moore's been on the pitch, you could again say that we do lack sometimes. So
Michael Morrison was captain for Birmingham last season, and Matt Miasca's captain in the USA, and there's other players on that pitch as well. So I wouldn't be afraid of sort of a lack of leadership in Moore's absence.
And it depends as well as to whether you believe that a player has to have spent a lot of time at a club to be a leader and to be a captain. I mean, Paul McShane came in and was named captain in his first season under Steve Clarke a few years ago, and I think he did a pretty decent job as a captain. So, you know, it's just one of those things, and I do think that this, for now, with the form we're in, it kind of answers itself with more whether he's in the team or not. And I don't see us going back to a back three, which I think we did play in the last few minutes at Birmingham, just to kind of ease the pressure a little bit. The next stat I want to move on to then, Ollie, is that we are the 7th best away side all season, but the 21st best home side for the entire season. So obviously Bowen and Gomez combined. Why is there such a discrepancy in our form? Are we just more suited to playing away? Is it the teams, you know, come to the Mad Stad with a bit more confidence than they think? Are teams underestimating us when we go on the road? Is it a tactical thing? You know, what's the reason for such a massive discrepancy?
It's tough, isn't it? I think, you know, I haven't seen enough away games this season to say whether we set up differently on the road or whatever. But I think certainly after that embarrassing 3-0 defeat to Wigan at home a couple of weeks ago, Mark Burns said there was a potential fear factor of playing at the Mad Stad, which obviously not the thing you want to be hearing. But I don't know whether it's a case of sort of the home crowd is quite expectant. Obviously, we spent a lot of money in the summer. And obviously, you know, the wins over Christmas sort of propelled us into a position where the playoffs might have been possible. And the crowd might have become expectant of that. Whether the players are feeling that, I'm not too sure. Away from home, I think obviously, you know, a lot of what Bowen has done since he's come in is sort of bring that togetherness, bring that sort of unity, spirit, desire, whatever you want to call it. And perhaps that is best, you know, sort of personified on the road when the odds are stacked against you, you know, in those games against Preston, Fulham, the weekend against Birmingham. It's at those times where that togetherness really comes into its own. So perhaps that's one reason for it. I think if you look at the breakdown really sort of under Gomez and under Mark Bowen, we're actually 10th in the table at home since Mark Bowen has come in, so not quite as bad as the 21st in the table sort of overall the whole season. I think under Gomez we won one and lost four of our home games this season when Gomez was in charge. So obviously that contributes a lot to the overall home record. But I mean, under Mark Burn, 6 wins, 2 draws, 5 defeats at home. And then we're 4th best away under Mark Burn. So certainly, as I say, that togetherness is perhaps best personified away from home. At home, it's difficult. It's frustrating. I think, you know, we haven't really been blown away by teams at home. I think other than really that Wigan game, we've been in games at home. So it's not as if we're struggling massively. But you know, a few results have obviously gone against us, so it is difficult. I think we had our stats corner on the website last week saying this is shaping up to be our worst ever season at the Malaysia Stadium since we moved there. So obviously it isn't very good reading at all. But I think we're obviously very lucky that the away form was made up for that.
Feels to me like a bit of a confidence issue. You kind of touched upon it there, and it seems that, I mean, I went to the speaking very early on in the Mark Bowen era now, but one of the performances that has impressed me most this season was the QPR away performance when we drew 2-2. Could very easily have snatched it on a different day, but against a good team, we just seemed to have a level of confidence about us that we knew what we were doing, we knew the game plan, we knew how to approach certain situations. And compared that to Tuesday night's game against Sheffield United, there were a number of times when we got into good positions with perhaps a few more defenders in front of us than you'd have away from home. And obviously that being one of the best defences in the country as well, Sheffield United. But we kind of just didn't know what to do. We just didn't know what to make that final ball. And the same thing you can say happens in the whole game we've had and in the Wigan game. And it just seems to me like we're not quite... We don't really know in our minds what to do with that final ball in the home games when we are, you know, faced with a few more defenders. And despite that, you mentioned the Bowen stats there. We are 5th in the Championship overall since Mark Bowen came in, a +10 goal difference. I mean, there is no negative to that stat, really, is it? Since Bowen's come in, we have been the 5th best team in the Championship. Sometimes it doesn't really feel like it, but the stats, you know, you can't argue with it, can you?
No, I think we are obviously quite close to sort of being lower down that table. I think we're a lot closer to, say, 15th since Burn came in than first. Obviously, Leeds and West Brom are far, far higher up. So, obviously, you know, if we dropped points in a couple more games, we might be a bit lower down. But, yeah, no, regardless, you know, fantastic. I might have been incredibly pleasantly surprised by Mark Burn since he's come in. Obviously, we had a little wobble over Christmas, but I think on the whole, he's getting results where you expect him to get results. You know, I think we were discussing it amongst the editors at the weekend. There's been no sort of real shockers under Burn apart from that Wigan game. You know, we've had sort of disappointing results against, you know, likes of Millwall away, I think, the Birmingham home game and the whole home game as well. You might have thought we might be able to get something out of those games, but on the whole, we've not really sort of truly been battered in games apart from that Wigan game. So, yeah, I've got no complaints with him He's done really, really well. You know, we were in the relegation zone when he took over. So for us to be sort of safely mid-table now, and obviously the win at the weekend has brought up some very optimistic playoff hopes again. But, you know, after the last couple of years we've had where we've sort of been struggling at the bottom, obviously 2 years ago it went down to the final day before we secured survival last season. I think it was only two games to go. And obviously the win at the weekend now against Birmingham, it means that we've got more points this season than we did in the whole of last season. So that tells you what a fantastic job Mark Byrne has done. You know, he's not perfect, of course he's not. You know, this is his first job as a head coach. But look, I've got no complaints with the job he's done so far. Is he the answer long term? Who knows? But look, results wise, you know, he's getting the best result we've had since the playoff season. You know, even under sort of Jose Gomez last year, we weren't really winning two games in a row. You know, we were getting the odd win here and there, but I think we probably won two games in a row only once or twice under Jose Gomez. And Mark Byrne obviously got the four wins over Christmas, and he's got two wins in a row now. So results-wise, he's the best we've had since the Upstam. So I think, you know, we've changed managers so often over the last couple of years that I think you've got to give Bowen time now and, you know, see what he can do in the summer and going forward into next season, because he does seem to know how he wants to take this Reading team forward. There's not a particularly clear identity, which I know might upset some fans. Yeah. But as I say, at the end of the day, for me personally, the one thing that I care about most is results. And, you know, right now, Mark Byrne is getting results more often than he's not.
I think that's the thing for me when it comes to whether Bowen is underrated as what he's, the job he's done and everything. And we look back, I'm tempted to link this season to the sort of 09-10, I think it was, season when McDermott took over from Rodgers. And obviously that season we had, you know, like a 5-0 win and a 6-0 win and everything. It was a much bigger sort of momentum shift that we did have under McDermott. But we are still in that, you know, that season of a manager coming in and taking us forward with the view to next season. It's kind of similar in that regard. And Bowen isn't as rated as McDermott for obvious reasons, but part of that is, I think, because of the lack of identity, because you couldn't really say what this team's formula is, basically. You can say, oh, it's pragmatic, it is, you know, very good defensively, etc., but I wouldn't describe it as a passing team or a long ball team. It very much hasn't found its way in that particular manner. It doesn't have to find its way, but it just hasn't, and therefore fans, I think, kind of you know, certainly some fans certainly don't have an affinity with Mark Bowen that we would otherwise have with a different manager, such as Jose Gomez, who obviously was, you could certainly call his identity for what it was. So we'll hear from Mark Bowen now then, and then we'll jump on to have a little chat about that Sheffield United game in midweek.
I think we were all, not just me, everybody was saying, the players themselves, you know, it's tick, tick that one off 9 to go. You know, and we keep saying anything can happen in this league. You know, and I'm very loath to say, you know, we're looking above, because you've just got to take each game and keep trying to get a result. So the focus has got to be not too far ahead. Just Stoke City, I see they got a fantastic result to get. It'll be a hard game at home next week, because, you know, in terms of our mentality, going at home again and taking the game to them. But we've got to use our concentration for that game and see if we can get that one, and then we'll see where we are with 8 games to go and 7, and we'll do it that way.
So, Ollie, it was a 2-1 defeat against Sheffield United in the FA Cup. 120 minutes of football and one Billy Sharp header settled it 15 minutes from the end. It was, I mean, really, for me, it was just a really solid performance. Sometimes lacked a bit of inspiration in the attack, as I kind of mentioned earlier, but it was a very competent performance against what is, by a matter of fact, one of the best teams in the country at the moment, who had their best defence out. They changed a lot of their attack, so maybe that did us a few favours. But something that I kind of want to draw out of this game, and from the Birmingham game as well, is the Puskás performance. And George Puskás has struggled for me to really have any kind of, we just talked about this for the team, but struggled for me to have any kind of defined role or characteristic that you can latch onto in his game. What we've seen, I think, over the last few weeks is a slight progression towards that, in the sense that you can put the ball into him over the top, ideally. He'll chase it, he'll battle defenders, he'll have a finish on him. Those are the times, perhaps a bit one-dimensional he is, but he's proving to me now that he has got that sort of, he has got a game, he has got a plan, and that when you play to his plan, you realise that he's actually got a lot of potential to be a really decent striker.
Yeah, I mean, you don't play for Inter Milan without being a decent striker. You know, you don't. Well, obviously, we signed him for perhaps more than he's worth, but you don't sign for a club for £8.5 million, whatever it was, if you want a decent striker. And I think you're seeing, you know, now his confidence is beginning to grow. You know, he's having his best run of form in a Reading shirt. I think 4 goals in the last 6 games. It is. Obviously, 2 of those have been penalties. One was that lucky deflection against Sheffield Wednesday, and obviously the great goal against Barnsley. But I think it doesn't really matter how those goals go in. It's the fact that he's getting those goals now, and he's building that confidence. And really, yeah, no, we're starting to see what Puskás is all about. And I think, you know, we've talked about it a lot, that it's obviously very difficult for him to settle into a new country. Still, you know, quite a young striker. Obviously, a lot of expectation comes with that price tag. And, you know, I've been openly critical of Puskás this season, because I do think in the past he's not worked hard enough. He's not really shown enough focus or whatever. But, yeah, the last couple of games, he seems to have really sort of found his place in the side. And I think a lot of his struggles have been down to sort of a lack of service. He seemed quite isolated in a lot of games. And, again, that's not necessarily his fault. But the last few games, again, in that Sheffield United game, he seemed to work really, really hard. Which again is something that I've been critical of him in the past. He's not worked hard enough, but you know, he chased every ball in that Sheffield United game. He battled for every ball, and he won a couple of fouls. So, you know, yeah, we're starting to see what Puskás is about now. He's obviously not the complete package just yet, but I think I've said in the past that we've got him on a 4 or 5 year deal. So we have to invest in him. We have to give him time, and hopefully, you know, if he can keep on scoring goals for the rest of this season, you know, we can talk about that as a whole team. If this whole team can keep winning games, we can build momentum going into the next campaign, and that's the same for George Puskás as well. If he can score, you know, 5 more goals this season, you know, he goes into the next campaign having finished this season on 15 odd goals, which all in all it probably isn't that bad a return for him. So yeah, things are looking up for Puskás, I'd say.
Yeah, I would say that's the one frustrating thing about him is he's harrying off the ball and his kind of work rate and stuff. He's really good at it, but he just doesn't seem to do it enough for me. He seems to take 2 yards of chasing down a defender. The defender looks worried, and then Puskás just stops. So it seems a bit too easy for the defenders, which is one of the assets of his game. Maybe it's a fitness thing. Maybe it's a mentality thing. Who knows? But it's just a case of sorting it out and getting him back in the... you know, back in the groove, or sort of in the groove to begin with, to chase down defenders, work harder off the ball, and add that facet to his game that I think he has a lot of potential to deliver on. In terms of the cup run, we made it to the last 16. We had 3 home draws out of the draw. We drew all of those games basically, and then mopped up 2 of them in the away leg basically. So, what's your, you know, fond memories of this cup run? It's been a little bit of a weird one. But nonetheless, I suppose one we can look back on quite fondly.
Yeah, I was at the Cardiff replay. Obviously, being at uni in Cardiff was obviously quite convenient for me. But I think obviously having been at the league game a couple of days beforehand, which is quite a weird scenario when you play a team away from home, you know, twice in 4 days, whatever. And that league game was absolute dross, to be honest. It was one of the worst games I've seen all season. Then you compare it to that cup game. The 3-3 draw and then winning on penalties would have to go down as probably one of my favourite games of this season. It wasn't for about an hour, because Reading were 2-0 down for long periods of that. But, you know, that spirit, that desire to get back into the game, I spoke about it earlier, is personified most on the road. And you saw that in that Cardiff game. You know, I think it was Omar Richards who got the first goal back, and then Andy Rinnemotta came on and got the equaliser, and Mark Byrne made 3 great subs that day, bringing on Rinnemotta, Gareth McCleary and Johnny Luke. I think Jordan Beattie also came on in extra time. But yeah, that Cardiff away game was certainly up there for me as one of my favourite games of this season. Obviously winning on penalties as well. Sort of that shootout had sort of quite a narrative to it, really. Obviously Johnny Luke scoring the winning penalty, obviously having been through all he's been through at Reading. Gareth McCleary scoring that penalty as well, Jordan Beattie scoring a penalty having missed in the playoff final, and Gabe Osher as well putting an emphatic penalty into the bottom corner, which is fantastic to see. So yeah, all round that Cardiff game was really, really a memorable one, I'd say.
Yeah, and I think the any fan who went up to Blackpool for that long trip on a Tuesday night will be very happy to have come away with a 2-0 win. And that Sheffield United game as well, it went, you know, these cup runs have to end somehow. And I remember in past years, you know, when we flopped a 2-0 lead at home to Villa in 1 quarter final, and then a you know, going to Man City and having Mika Richards score a late header to win that. These, they always end in disappointment some way, but for, you know, the valiance of the performance, I think, was a really decent atmosphere as well at the game. So hopefully it's something that will go down in fans' memories as a good cup run, and something that we can hold in our memories positively. Let's move on now to the mailbag, where we've actually got quite a few questions looking ahead to what's going to be coming up in the next few weeks and months.
You're listening to the Tarhurst End podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
Kicking us off this week in the mailbag, anyone who wants to send in your question, please send them over to thetarhurstend@gmail.com or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll always make sure we put them in the show. And Chris Hartley has done just that this week, and he asks, given that we are going to end up mid-table and with a squad that is improving, where do we need to add in the summer, and who do you think we will offer new deals to of the players out of contract? Now, just to remind you, Ollie, the players who are going to leave the club on loan, in theory, at the end of the season are Ovi Ejaria and Matt Miazga, Pele, Lucas Boye and Masika. The contract players, those who are out of contract at the end of the season, Chris Gunn says Tyler Blackett, Jordan Abita, Charlie Adam, Gareth McCleary and Danny Loader. Let's talk about those players who are out of contract first. It really feels to me like Tyler Blackett's off, because we've been rotating Jordan Abita and Omar Richards as our left backs, with Blackett just seemingly sat on the bench the entire time. So it really feels to me like Mark Bowen has said, you know what, if you're going to sign it, maybe he signed a pre-deal, or he's just told the club he's not going to sign. He looks like he's just sort of off now. I would like to see Jordan Abita given a new contract. I don't think there's much chance of Charlie Adam, McCleary. Seems to me like Danny Loader is going to leave of his own volition. And with Chris Gunter, if he's, you know, give him a year, if he's happy for some diminutive terms, I wouldn't see any reason not to keep him on.
Yeah, I think out of those six players, I think Jordan Abita is the one I would definitely give a contract to. Obviously, he has had his injury problems in the past, and obviously spent, you know, 2 years out on the sidelines. But I think, obviously, he's an academy graduate, you know, clearly sort of, you know, loves the club to a certain extent. So I'd keep him around, as you say. Tyler Blackett appears to be off the reports in January that he might have signed a deal in Turkey or whatever, but I'd be happy with Jordan Abita and Omar Richards as our two left backs. Chris Gunn is a tricky one. You know, obviously we sold Teddy Howe in January, perhaps with the idea that Gunter might stay around. Obviously Andy Eardom is quite clearly the first choice right back. Felipe Arruña brought in January as well, who can play right back. So whether that was, you know, with the thinking that Gunter might leave, I'm not sure. Obviously, you know, he's coming towards the end of his sort of peak now. I think he's 30, 31. So, you know, certainly not played as much this season or last season. Obviously, had his well-documented problems under Jose Gomez. But I think it's all down to sort of what he himself wants. I think if he feels that he can go somewhere else in the Championship or perhaps higher-end League One and be first choice for a club, then I wouldn't be surprised to see him go. But I don't think he's a bad backup. I don't think we can, well, when Yeardon was injured, he certainly plays, I think, some of his best football in a Reading shirt, and obviously he's been here a very, very long time. But when Yeardon was injured sort of over Christmas, Gunter was excellent, so he's certainly still got the quality and the ability. But yeah, I'd say it's probably down to the player himself about whether he wants to stay.
You know, on this topic, I must say, when it comes to playing for the summer, we've had a bit of a luxury, I suppose, in the last few years, although it's a curse as much as that we haven't been talking about how many players we're going to sell or players that are going to attract massive offers from the Premier League or whatever, because they just haven't been those sort of players at the club. But this summer, the player that I think is most likely to attract those offers and leave is Andy Yeardon. I think he suits the Premier League, or, you know, I don't think we'll sell him to a Championship rival, but he suits the Premier League in the sense that he's an incredibly attack-minded, athletic, technical right-back who, you know, I'm sure he's not that bad defensively for anyone who wants to train him up. But I think that right-back position is going to be a real issue for us, because I just have a feeling that Yeardon is going to be that player that is wanted most in the market.
I think it might be Renamotta. I wouldn't be surprised to see him go to the Premier League. I think there were rumours that Leeds potentially fancied him, and I think in the summer Sheffield United were interested in him as well, and obviously a very good display from him against them in the FA Cup, you know, worked on him any favours at all in terms of them potentially buying him. There are a number of players that we might be worried about leaving. If Yedom did leave, would I be happy with Gunter as a first choice right back? Maybe. I don't think, obviously.
Probably not.
I mean, certainly not long term. Obviously, you know, we sold Teddy Howe in January, and he was perhaps seen as a long term option. Tanai Watson is still at the club, but I don't think he's probably going to make it at Championship level. And then Arunya as well. So, yeah, we would probably look to try and bring in a replacement if Yedom did leave. I'd hope that he wouldn't. But, yeah, I'd say him and Anirin and Mota are probably the two players I'd be most worried about losing in the summer.
Yeah, final point, I suppose, on Yedom is that if we do sell him for, let's say, £8 million, you can go and spend £3 million of that on a good Championship right-back. And
yeah.
That kind of seals that. So I suppose that's the benefit of selling your right-back, because it's a like-for-like swap for a new signing. And hopefully you get someone who's pretty decent. Scott from the States asking, for the rest of the season, would you play our best 11 every match, or would you give more minutes to younger players who are under contract for next season? I think you've just got to play your best 11, because we talked about Matt Miazga, who is out of contract effectively with Reading. I think that if you take him out of the team, you kind of kill any chances of him actually coming back for another loan year or signing him permanently. So in a way, the only three loan players that I think we could sign permanently are Jari, Miazga and Pele, are all doing a really decent job in the first team, are all semi-realistic to be signed, certainly Jari permanently. So therefore, I think you just keep him in.
Yeah, I'd agree. As I said earlier, I'd go all out to try and sign Matt Miazga in the summer. Pele, I wouldn't be against signing him. I think if we can try and perhaps bring in someone who's a bit more solid defensively. Obviously, you know, he's had a good couple of weeks, but I think there are better players out there than Pele. But whether it's a case of a budget, whether we'd be able to get Pele cheap or whether he would want to come back, I think he said after the Birmingham game on the weekend that he loves the city of Reading. So I think he wouldn't be against coming back. Me and Sim discussed a similar question on the podcast a couple of weeks ago about playing our strongest side, and I think it is a case of trying to build momentum going into next season. You know, we've got a decent-ish run, and I think we've only got Brentford left to play from the top six, so there's an opportunity for Reading to build some momentum going into next season, and obviously the best way to do that is to play your best team. I think, you know, you might want to put youngsters on the bench in place of maybe Gareth McCleary or Tyler Black if they're destined to be off. You know, you might want to put on someone like, I don't know, Tyler Frost at right wing, or Romani Medford-Smith at centre back over Tyler Blackett. But I think in general, I think one player definitely you want to be giving as much minutes as possible to is Michael Olise, who's really come into his own the last couple of weeks, and obviously still only 18 years old, and you don't want to burn him out, but at the same time, you know, he seems to be a real talent for the future. So the more experience we can give him now when the games don't necessarily matter all that much, I think that the more time we can give him on the pitch, and you know, it's not just because he needs to get those minutes, he seems to be meriting that time as well at the moment, you know, really standing out in the last couple of games. So yeah, I would play our strongest team between now and at the end of the season.
Yeah, I'd echo that point on Lise. I think he's done more than enough to show that he can be a verified first teamer between now and the end of the season anyway. So he kind of has that position bank nailed down for me. FPL Observer tweets us saying, unlikely of course, but are the playoffs impossible? Now I can tell you that Preston, who are currently in 6th place on 56 points, which is 8 clear of Reading, they've lost 3 games in a row. Then you go down Bristol City, who are 5 without a win. Millwall have only won 1 in 4. Cardiff have only won 1 in 5. Blackburn are winless in 4. Swansea have only won 1 in 9. So you go from 6th to 11th, and you can tick off plenty of teams on some pretty dodgy runs. Then you get to, you know, Derby, QPR, Reading, Sheffield Wednesday, all in the sort of mid-table mix, as it were, with Birmingham as well. You know, you can swing it both ways. You can swing it with all those stats that I've just said and the fact that Reading have a good run in, and you can maybe think of a way of 8 points in 9 games not being the hardest thing in the world to overcome. The problem for me is that we are basically talking about one position going. Sixth place is the only one that realistically we can get to. And as we're 14th, for me, where we are at the back of that pack, there are just too many teams and not enough time for Reading to break into the top six, or at least to realistically think that we can break into the top six.
Yeah, I would sadly tend to agree. I would never say never, because I'd say, you know, the run is decent. You know, look at the teams we've got coming off to Stoke at the weekend, and Derby, as I say, Brentford's really the only top six game we've got left to play. You know, we've got Luton, Huddersfield, Charlton, Middlesbrough, all sides that are struggling down the bottom of the team. That not necessarily the best team to play, because they'll be desperate for points themselves, but in terms of quality opposition, Reading aren't coming up against much that should, I say should, trouble them over the next couple of weeks. So there is a chance, but yeah, as you say, it's one spot between sort of 10 teams you might fancy it. And even if Preston, who are sixth at the moment, even if they drop out, you know, there will be five or six teams who will be getting that spot ahead of Reading, I would say. I think there was a graphic on Twitter from Experimental 361, who does some great sort of stats and graphics for the top four leagues, and did a percentage chance of each team's hopes of getting into the top six. I think Reading had something like a 0.5% chance of getting into that top six, and also a 0.5% chance of going down. So I think we can probably say we'll be sort of safely mid-table, troubling neither the top six or bottom three. As I say, I wouldn't be surprised just to see us push up a few more places with that running. And it is important to try and build some momentum going into next season and getting that confidence of what up and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, it does make you wonder. Obviously, you know, if we'd beaten Wigan in the game that on paper we perhaps should have picked up 3 points in, and then that gap is only 5 points to the playoffs, I think you'd see a lot more people saying that we're in with a chance. So it's tough. I think sadly it does seem just too big of a gap for now.
I take your point on the Wigan, but as I think I told you on Facebook on the weekend, if you take away those 3 points for Wigan, they go into the relegation zone, which is probably a bit of a bigger sort of swing in terms of the dramaticness of it. So I do think that I think that the 8 point gap, it's only 9 points to the relegation zone if you can,
that's the thing.
You can look back down as well. So it's just too much. And to be honest, the way that I think that we as fans should approach it is not to get ahead of ourselves. And we can dream of playoffs and we can always talk about next season. Those are absolutely fine to do. But to place the pressure on the team and, you know, let's say, for example, we're 1-0 down at Stoke at half time. It should be viewed upon as a scenario which we can deal with, and that is not, if it's viewed as a disaster scenario that's killed our playoff hopes and we all get on the team's back, that's not going to help them. But if we as fans think, you know what, we're not actually a playoff chasing team, we're 1-0 down, let's have some patience, that will improve, I think, the scenario and improve the team. So that's the reason I think that we don't need to get too het up about the playoffs. Next season is next season, we'll come on to that later. Uncle Kev, with the final question for the mailbag, sent him over Gmail. He says, hi guys, top work on the podcasting, long term listener, never got in touch until now, thank you very much. He says, so Kevin Friend didn't have the best of games, but didn't cost us the game as much as people want to blame him against Sheffield United. Few naive decisions and bitty fouls. Billy Sharp is a silly Billy. I've changed that slightly from what he actually sent us. His celebration, not only for the goal, but at the end of the game in the face of Morrison, was disgusting. Positives are that we had a game plan against a good team and it worked well. Shame some weeks we don't look like we have a plan. Inconsistent results and mediocrity for the rest of the season, and we go again. Rinomota looks like he has played himself into the team, which is nice to see. And then he asks, do we struggle against teams with no identity to plan against? Now, the thing is, for me, I think that this is the home and away question sort of boiled down for me, is that we struggle to plan against teams that are probably just going to sit in more. I think that's what it is more for me. If there's more space in the game, if the teams are going to come at us more and open up and off the opportunity, you know, you look at Matt Miazga, centre-back in the area against Birmingham, he has a four-yard circle around him of no defenders. That's not going to happen at home in reality, or certainly not very often. So for me, I think the teams that we struggle against, it doesn't necessarily boil down to identity as much, Ollie. It boils down to the teams that suit our style of play. And Sheffield United, being a very organised defensive team away from home, sat in a bit more professional, a bit more competent than the sort of teams we usually face. And that was that.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think, you know, we've spoken about isolation of the attackers in the past, and certainly, you know, when teams do sit back, you know, the likes of George Puskas and Mate and Sam Bordock especially, find it very difficult when they're up front by themselves. You know, obviously be interesting to see how Lucas Joao might have got on if he was fit. But yeah, I think, you know, especially against Sheffield United, I think you mentioned it earlier that, you know, they've got one of the best defences in the entire country. I think only changed one of that back five. I think Ben Osborne came in for Ender Stevens, but other than that, you know, you had George Bulldog, John Egan, Jack O'Connell and Chris Basham, and obviously Dean Henderson in goal as well. So, you know, we were coming up against a Premier League top five defence, really. And as I say, George Puskas was quite isolated, as others have been in the past. So, we spoke about sort of our own identity earlier, and perhaps that's something to fix to try and beat teams. But yeah, I tend to agree that if teams sit back, then we do find it quite hard.
Yeah, and that's something that we are, well, probably going to have to face once again on the weekend when Stoke comes to town. We'll talk about that game in a little while, but now let's jump over to News Bites and catch up with what's been going on around the club this week.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Major news out of the club this week then, Ollie, is that Raphael, the goalkeeper, has been named the Tarlest End Player of the Month for February. 6 appearances, 2 clean sheets and 66% of the vote, which is the second highest winning percentage of the season. So a pretty dominant win then for the goalkeeper. And really, this is a sort of long time coming award for me. It feels like Raphael, we never talk about him, and that is because we are not forcing him into having, you know, 5 or 6 amazing saves per game like we kind of used to make Ali Al-Habsi do. And also because he just doesn't, touch wood, make mistakes. He doesn't offer that kind of Vito Minoni-esque, Adam Federici-esque worry that something is going to go cataclysmically wrong 3 or 4 times a season. And that, for me, is the real steady stability element that he offers to us. And I think it's certainly an award well deserved.
Yeah, I mean, in many ways, sort of the less you talk about a goalkeeper, the better he probably has been. Because generally goalkeepers only really get talked about when they make mistakes. And yeah, look, we've obviously been very lucky with goalkeepers in recent years. And Martinez was fantastic for us last season. So it was perhaps a bit of a worry, you know, who was going to come and replace him this season. And obviously João Virginia had a very, very shaky start to the campaign. But Raphael's come in and done fantastically. And not just sort of on the pitch, but off it as well. He seems to have adapted to life in England very, very quickly. His English, I think he did an interview with the club a couple of months ago, and it's fantastic, really, considering he spoke, you know, barely a word of the language when he first came in. So he seems like a really, really nice guy as well. As I say, adapted to life very, very quickly. It's a very, very reliable presence between the sticks. You know, he's kept the score down in a couple of games. As you say, he's not making, you know, several saves per game, and so that's obviously credit to the defence in front of him. But when he is called upon, you know, he makes that save to keep it, you know, to keep Reading in the lead, or to keep them level. So, yeah, and to say that we got him on a free transfer in the summer is obviously very, very impressive business too.
Well, it's a testament to the club for recognising that João Virginia, a player who was signed in a financial sort of mess that we were in, wasn't good enough, and late in the window to go and get someone who was good enough. And
yeah,
and it's worked out very well. And Raphael, actually, in our tweet for the Tarlest End Player of the Month, he did respond to that saying, "Thank God," with a sort of praying hands emoji. So probably the best review that we've ever got on this podcast. So congratulations to Raphael. Quick rundown then of what the academy and the women's team have been up to since. The women's team, as said before, it's the She Believes Cup at the moment, so they're on a big international break. They don't play until March 22nd. The under-18s also on a bit of a break. March 14th, their next in action against Arsenal. Under-23s, however, they played Aston Villa on Monday. They won 3-1, and they lost 2-1 to Everton in the Premier League Cup on Sunday. They were 2-0 down inside 11 minutes, actually, and then Augustus McGiff with a late consolation. Their next in action at home to Sunderland, that's at Hogwood, the training ground, on Monday the 16th. Reading FC, the senior team, however, are in action on the 14th. We'll jump into that now and talk about the game against Stoke in Big Match Preview.
there's another huge game ahead for the Royals. So be loud and be proud for the big match preview.
3 p.m. at the Mad Stad then on Saturday the 14th. Stoke come to town, and this is a game that has not produced a huge amount of entertainment over the years. Four of our last five meetings have ended as draws. The last two have been 0-0. Ollie, this is a game which we think, I mean, it falls into that classic category of something that we should win, but ultimately Stoke still, you know, they may be 17th and a few points off us, but they are still capable of producing a good performance, as they did on the weekend and when they beat Hull 5-1.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. It's a game we should be winning, but as we were talking about our home form earlier, nothing seems to be guaranteed at the Mad Stad this season. And yeah, obviously that result against Hull is obviously very impressive. I think Hull themselves seem to be dropping off a cliff, really, since Jared Bowen and Kamal Grosicki left in January. So that they
usefully
might.
We didn't beat them though, which was very
correct. Yeah. So yeah, take that result. Stokes went over there with a pinch of salt because Hull are falling apart. If you know that they've still got a squad packed full of quality, you know that there's no way they should be where they are in the table. You know, the likes of, you know, Tom Ince, Jack Butland has obviously had a couple of mistakes this season, but is still a decent championship goalkeeper, and you know, Nick at the weekend. So I think I predicted them to finish in the top six at the start of the season. So it's a squad that obviously I think they themselves pretty recognise shouldn't be where it is. Michael O'Neill seems to have come in and done a pretty good job at sort of steadying the ship. Got very, very good pedigree with Northern Ireland and seems to be doing a decent job at Stoke as well. So, as you mentioned, they're only 3 points above the relegation zone. So certainly they're not out of trouble yet. So they'll be desperate for the points, and I'm sure they'll be looking at Reading and thinking that we're a team that they can potentially get points out of. I think we spoke about it before the Wigan game, that Wigan and Barnsley will look at the Reading home game and think that it's a game they can get something out of. And obviously Wigan did emphatically. So we have to be cautious. Obviously two wins in a row is great. You know, if we can keep it going for as long as possible. I think we've got Derby away after that. So it's two certainly winnable games from teams who are, I think Derby might be below us in the table, but Stoke obviously below us. So it's a good chance for another win. But as I say, nothing is guaranteed, it seems, at the moment.
No, well, I will slightly temper that with a stat that I only about 10 minutes ago discovered, is that Derby are the second best team at home in the entire league this season. They've only lost twice. So maybe this game is a bit more important in terms of picking up points, given that we have, you know, Derby and Brentford to come up afterwards. But in terms of Stoke, they are 4 unbeaten. They've only won one away game since New Year's Day. Reading haven't beaten Stoke since April 2006, when John Hall scored in a 3-1 win, but the last Stoke league win in Reading came in December 1992. So I think in terms of the our prediction for this, I'm going to go for a classic 2-2 draw, because this is a, you know, one of those that maybe historically will just doom to, kind of like when we faced Cardiff earlier in the season, it just doomed to never really get a proper one over each other. In terms of the prediction league, the 3-1 bandit handbags did a profit from Birmingham. He's still bottom on 14 points. I'm still top by 9 points. So Ollie, as you're kind of in that fight for Champions League places at the moment and going for second place, what would you say your prediction is for this Stoke game?
I'm going to follow the trend of draws as well, I think. I'm sure someone will pull out the stat that if we do beat Stoke, obviously the last time we beat them was in the 05-06 season. So whether every time we beat Stoke, then we go up. I'm sure someone might bring that one out. But yeah, I'm going to go for a draw. I'm going to go for 1-1, I think.
Fair enough. I can certainly see that being a popular scoreline. I think really with this game, it's just one of those that if we don't win, like I said earlier with the playoff thing, it shouldn't be taken as a disaster. And yeah, if Stoke beat us, you can probably put an official, if not mathematical, nail into the coffin of the playoff hopes. And if we win, maybe it's still, you know, maybe we'll only be 5 points off or 6 points off or something. But that is a, you know, let's just make sure that we don't overreact if we don't get the 3 points on Saturday. We've got a free week until then, which is actually quite important as well, given that we've been probably absolutely knackered from all the games we've been playing recently. Hopefully that'll play into our advantage. So that leaves this episode of the podcast into the history books. And thank you very much, Ollie, for joining me this week.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we'll be back probably next Monday after that Stoke game. And this is a time when Reading fans can kind of sit back and relax. And the relegation worries have been cast aside for a season. The solid FA Cup run is in the books. We're starting to pick up some results that are actually just quite pleasing on the eye as well. So let's hope we can get another one of those next weekend. And come on, your ass.
You smile, funny how the crowd